a hierarchy here. So we just get the comment.
No, what I mean is that it's a really good example for you to demonstrate.
Right. But Stephen just made the comment that this is a really crappy test in the context of what we're trying to do. But there's a very good hierarchy here. No tests, crappy tests, great tests.
Crappy test for what class of great test and no tests?
I have seen some projects where it was easiest to delete the tests and start over, unfortunately. But very few of those. So, I've got myself a new test, and I can save it and make sure it runs. So it runs and passes. It's gone up from 3 tests to 4 tests in this file. And I can now look at the common data I've got. I've got the setup, which is checking that the sample data is right, and that's the same in both. And then when I look at this, I'm not using this data variable later on in this test. This is why I said there's actually not just some duplicate setup stuff, there's work that's not needed anymore, it wasn't relevant to the later tests in that function. So in terms of factoring out the differences, I can just delete all of that. And I'm going to want to turn these first four lines into a helper function. Now I could put it in the setup in the setup function. As we mentioned earlier, Python test suites have this common code thing. But there are other tests in this file that might be affected if I do that. So I'm just going to put it in a helper function I'll call. And this is get base data. Base feed, maybe? Get base feed. So this should still give me 4 passing tests if I've done it right. But it hasn't, something went wrong. So base is that. No section test feed from line 78. So let's go all the way back to when it was working. That's working. So I made an assumption there that this code was duplicate and not needed. So let's start somewhat simpler. Let's just pull this stuff out. On the fly demos. Now, is it Paul Fenwick that says never, no, Damien Conway, never have a real demo. Always be doing
great stuff.
Well, that's on this machine, sorry. Anyway, the point here is I want to end up with a really nice small test that is completely understandable. So this is feeds with future data in it. That's the glitch that I'm really trying to deal with. Which I've got by looking at the fact we've got future dates and some of that. I do indeed. So this should, this time, one step at a time, change one variable, yay, it works. And do the same thing here. Yay. Okay, what about the rest of this common code? I have here a read file pointer, a set test feed ignore date, do stuff, set test feed ignore entry. I'm not using the scrub field at all, so I think I can delete that from this one. Like I don't use the data, which I think is modified by that function. This should all still pass. Okay, and the config.parser line, I suspect that will break if I remove that. Just a hunch. Yep. So it looks like these two lines are common. And what I would describe them as doing is that they set the ignore date config. They give me a configuration that will ignore the date. So I'm going to factor them out. And if you don't like camel case, I hope this won't put you off testing. No comment.
You're not passing config down to the function.
That's right.
Or is it from the top of the line?
One of the things I don't like about this particular code base is its use of global variables. So if I come down here and do that, I now have a function which is pretty much exactly what it needs to do, and it's got no duplicate code in that top section. Or at least, you know, we're calling a couple of helper functions. It's not enough to be worried about. And I think this one here actually can be called ignore date. Does not set ignore. Okay. Better than future 2, I think, even though it's getting a little long. Can I break this down any further? This deep copy and scrub would seem to be common. So if I wanted to, you know, this is kind of just getting into standard, you know, reduce some duplication in your code.
Also, for much larger examples, this is a very small example, for much larger examples, it's a great idea to actually commit the stuff that works even though it has redundant code.
Yeah.
It's a completely separate change set.
Yeah.
Refactor and keep the test working.
One of the reasons I said this was a bit cruddy was actually because those deep copies are because there were three tests in the one test.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually, if you analyze it a bit further, you actually discover that the deep copy before the scrub, before the asserts, is unneeded. And you can just pass around, what's the variable name?
The base. Right, so having done this, it, as you say, it's now pretty clear that I'm not using base more than once in this entire function.
Mm.
So I can come up here and I can just pass in the thing to scrub, and that's so bloody silly, I can just unwind what I did before, so I go from data to base in the
yeah.
assertions.
Yeah. Excellent.
Right. So I think that these two tests are much more understandable, even though I haven't added comments to the two tests, than the single larger one. As Stephen has said, there are no deep copies anymore, and deep copies are kind of a sign that you're doing something unusual within Python.
Spelling,
yeah, it's a code smell. That's really the crux of it. Now, an example of where I've seen this used, where it was a real problem, was we had a test about this long. On this size font, it would be two times the height of this room. In testing the command line interface for Beads of R. And it was testing, it was creating a branch, and it was moving stuff around, it was adding and committing and deleting, and it was entirely impossible to tell without reading the entire test, all 60 or 70 odd lines, what the specific thing being tested at that point was. We fixed that by breaking it apart and doing exactly this, and we ended up adding more library functions that made it much easier to bring up a working tree that has a file that hasn't been added, and so on. And there was some hit in terms of we were doing more setup now, because we were running a whole bunch of independent tests, but we had library functions that didn't need to invoke Beads of R and go and do precisely what we needed from within So once we finished putting those in, the whole thing was faster than the single big one was before. And I think that, you know, the questions I normally get from people about this are all about performance, and it's addressable. It's just a matter of looking at what you're doing and really taking the time to understand how many layers are being hooked in. Any questions?
Sometimes when you do tests, when you find bugs, the bugs only occur when a certain sequence of events takes place. So, do you just recommend doing a setup for all combinations before the operation and testing?
So, I think there's two different things you're looking at there. One is, how do you find new bugs by using a testing approach? And the other one is, how do you make sure that you don't allow a regression to occur because you're not testing the thing that was actually triggering it? Okay. So on the latter, if you have a use case that you want people to be able to do that involves more than one step by the user, by all means, have a user-level test, a smoke test. It's an integration test that just does this use case. But it's not actually going to help you diagnose what's gone wrong very well, because you're going to have to get halfway through this thing and pause the program and go and fiddle on disk and look at what's going on to really understand it. You should have a separate test for each component. In fact, you should have several separate tests down at each component that really exercise what's going on. If you identify a bug and that's a big use case, write a test that exercises the bug. Set it up with the state that will trigger the bug in the function that is faulty.
Yeah, another way of saying, you know, we've got this really long convoluted setup. Got it. At the end of that setup, your system is going to be in a particular state. And then when you do this one action in that particular state, a defect happens and it doesn't arrive in the state that you expected. Okay? So then you look at, can we refactor our system so that we can arrive in that particular corner case state efficiently? Sometimes the answer is no, and it might be no for political reasons rather than technical. Sometimes, yeah, you put up the long setup and the long test. But it's often the case, as Robert was saying, you can write yourself library functions which will allow you to put the system in the exact state you need. When they're testing CPUs, for example, there's normally two pins on a CPU labeled don't connect anything. And they're used to shift bits into, yeah, like a JTAG port, shift bits into all of the bits in the CPU to get it into an exact precise state so that they can put one value on the address bus, do one clock cycle, and have the CPU do one instruction. And then they suck all the state back out and check it. Okay? So it's sometimes the case that you put in the effort, and that costs them a lot of gates.
Yeah.
But the alternative, let's see if we can find a combination of opcodes that will get it into that state that we want to test.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where I was going to jump in. One of the things we've got in the paper is using random data to find a small testing subset of data. So with that particular problem where you've got this setup, with the first crash you probably find that you've got one module that's under suspicion. So if you have a way of feeding that module random data until you can find the crash, and you actually, if Gus is looking at me because Gus knows where I'm, well, Gus thinks I'm going the wrong direction. You feed it random
state
data.
Preview.
Yeah, sorry.
State preview. You feed it random data.
Until you find the data that actually causes that breakage, then that data becomes part of the test suite data. So it's repeatable in that way.
Yeah.
And so now Gus is...
The very important distinction is that you snapshotted it so that it's repeatable.
You don't always test with random data.
I've seen test suites that just
go,
let's run 100 times with some random
data,
and then you go,
we might
fail.
Yeah,
that's great. Excellent. I'll do it again and see what caused it.
One of the things we emphasize when we're talking about this is that day-to-day testing with random data is a really bad idea, because if you do find a bug, if it's truly random data, how do you recreate it?
And it's slow.
Yeah. It's slow. So the particular thing I had was a diff algorithm, and I found that it actually crashed. And I actually thought I had full test coverage as far as I was concerned. I had a test coverage covered every line, or so I thought. And by generating random string data to test with this thing, I found a couple of cases that crashed. Those strings were actually printed out with the first crash, put those in the test suite, and bootstrap from there.
That's actually quite similar to the thing I've heard previously, where of capturing that sequence of events,
yeah,
and then going back and finding the minimum set.
Yeah, exactly. It's not original. This doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Generally, first response testing in that case of
right. But the key distinction is that having large tests or tests that take a long time to execute and are non-deterministic doesn't help you. It might flow up of an error once in a time, but one of the key things you want tests to do is to help you diagnose problems. A test that went, something went wrong. That doesn't help you fix the problem. A test that says, expected this, from this state, got this, here's a trace back, here's a core dump, here's the database log file preserved on disk from before and after the state. This is a database example, but that sort of depth of information, bang, you can take that, you can look at it, you can spend a week if you need to, but you've got all the information there to recreate, figure out, bang, you can fix it.
One of the things I see quite often is test suites that just pump out piles and piles of this test pass, that test pass. I'm actually perfectly happy with a test that goes at the end of it, or is, you know, spins a thing, and then at the end of the thing says everything passed. If it fails, I want a lot more information than just it passed.
But there's nothing worse than running 4,000 tests, have two of them fail, and you have to go back through a couple of megabytes worth of verbal diarrhea to find the two failure points.
I think we should probably stop at this point. We are obviously all very keen to talk about this, and perhaps you can grab us now and we can talk one-on-one.
And there's a paper tomorrow.
Come to the paper tomorrow. All of the stuff we've been talking about is part of that.
Okay, can we show our appreciation and all that?